as people and individually and in groups look at their circumstances in life, they sometimes ask themselves as they see difficulties, will everything be okay? Sometimes that's a question that's asked by young people. Sometimes it's a question asked by married people. Sometimes it's a question asked by single people in the later years. But people will sometimes see those dark clouds on the horizon and ask, is everything going to turn out okay? This is not a new question. It is a question that many characters in the Bible have asked. It's a question that we find in places like Genesis 41. At the end of Genesis 41, we read about a time that was a terrible time. There was a great famine that had encompassed a large area of land. It was the seven-year famine that had been predicted by Joseph, and things were really bad. It was so bad that Joseph's family had to, they didn't want to come back to Egypt. But they needed food so badly, and there was nothing to eat, so the family had to return to Egypt once more to get food. For the person who becomes a Christian and seeks to live a faithful Christian life, the Word of God says to that individual, things, no matter what they look like in your life, things will turn out okay. God has control of all things, the world, the universe, those things are in His hand. And the Bible affirms in many ways that He has promised to help His people. This point is made in a lot of different places and in many different ways. But tonight we want to explore it from the perspective of an Old Testament passage, Psalm 18. This psalm is somewhat unusual because if you open up Psalm 18 and you open up 2 Samuel chapter 22, the wording is almost identical. And that's kind of unusual to find a psalm which has wording which is almost verbatim to another passage in the Old Testament. If you look at these passages as well as some others that I'll not cite, it seems like David, in saying what he says in Psalm 18, 2 Samuel 22, and elsewhere, it seems to be that he's saying, throughout my time in life, I have experienced a number of difficult things. But even though the difficulties have been intense and they've been varied, whatever the circumstance, God has seen me through the hardships of life. And I'm thankful to God, I offer praise to God, because He has delivered me time and time again. Psalm 18 describes for us one of the times that David had been delivered, and the experience was something that had really been impressed on his mind. Now this, as you look at it, it is a long psalm. It is also a passage which falls into three natural divisions. After David spends the first three verses talking about God giving some information, he then, in verses 4 through 19, talks about God's mercy. David said, God has been compassionate and helpful to me. The second major division is found in verses 20 through 28. This is where David said, I've been favored by God. God has looked down upon me with kindness, and His favor, His mercy to me has been great. Then in verses 29 through 45, we have information about David's joy. He said, God has helped me. I find great joy in that. And I believe that as the future continues to move forward, God will continue to help me, and I'll still have this joy. Tonight, I just want to look at the first section of this psalm, verses 1 through 19, and we're going to approach the text in a somewhat unusual way. We're going to look at many of the verses individually. David, as you look at Psalm 18, verse 1, said, I love thee, O Jehovah. And then he gave a basis for that love. David, as he looked at God, said, I see you, I see my God as my strength. As David thought about some of the difficult circumstances that he had had to face in life, he said, I've been able to get through the hard times. God, I have been blessed beyond belief because you have been my strength. When we look at our culture, we find that many people trust in their own strength, their own power. It may be people trust in their wealth, or they trust in their connections, or their education, or their intellectual prowess, various things. Whatever we have as far as an achievement, whatever we possess as far as an earthly possession, it always has some kind of limitation. David understood that the best, the only reliable source of power is the one true God. So as he comes to this psalm, as he opens it, he says, God, you have been there for me. You've been my rock. You've been my strength. And I love you so much for being my help. In verse 2, he continues the point. He said that God had been his rock. He said that throughout his life, these difficult times, God had been his fortress. God had been the one who had stood by him and served as his deliverer. David even said to God, you have been the one that has offered me refuge. The imagery seems to go back to the time when David had fled from men like Saul. I've never been to the area of Judea, but if you do some reading about that area, you find that it was a mountainous area. As David was having to hide from people like Saul, he would have hid in those rocky areas. He would have chose the mountainous area because that, just like Al-Qaeda, has used that kind of area very, very effectively. And David, as he thinks back to those caves and the rocks that he had used for refuge, he compares that to the help and the protection, the aid that God had given him. He also recorded how God had been to him like something like a shield, just as we would have a shield that would protect the body from blows being inflicted by an enemy's sword or something else. David said, God, you've been my shield. You've been out there in front of me to ward off the blows of the enemy. In fact, in verse 3, he says, you have saved me from my enemies, plural. David had some enemies, and they were enemies that were really awful enemies. Things were so bad that in verse 4, David said there were cords of death, and these death cords had compassed him about. He said there were the floods from the ungodly. And those ungodly people that wanted David to suffer harm or death, David said, the problem was so bad that I was afraid. Now, that's not typically a word that I would associate with David. But David, as he looks back to this time in his life, he says, I was scared. I was afraid. We might even say that there were times in this man's life when he was terrified. When people today ask, what will I do? What will we do? Is God concerned about us? Will God help? Will God intervene? God's already heard that question. David asked those very questions many years ago. God's people from the past have often asked these very same questions. When we think about the opening imagery in this psalm, it is imagery that's based on water, almost, we might say, something like a severe storm. If you've ever been on a ship that was out maybe in a large body of water and a storm blew in, and that ship was being tossed back and forth in the waves, and maybe it was a situation that was so bad you thought that the boat might capsize, or maybe it was a situation where it looked like the boat was going to crash on the rocks. People have had that experience, and as they're on that ship, they can see the rocks are getting closer and closer, and they think the ship is going to crash into the rocks, and we're going to die. That's essentially what David is saying here in this particular psalm. The waters, the waves, the death cords had surrounded him, and things did not look very good. Verse 6 even uses the word distress. David was someone who had some real tough spots in his life. Today, as we look at the people that we know, maybe as we look at our own life, we find people, or maybe we ourselves, have suffered some form of great distress. We live in a time where there are some people who are suffering distress when it comes to employment issues. We live in a time where people suffer distress because of health issues. We find people who are distressed over family issues. On every hand, people are distressed about various things. Technology has helped us in so many ways. But rarely does technology help us with the anguish that people have, the kind of distress that's described in Psalm 18. David said, I've been through those rough times. Had he had the internet, email, the medical technology that we have today, that still would not have eliminated many of the things that he had. And David, as he looked at his resources, he said, there's one source of help, and that is the God of heaven and earth. He will help me. He will hear during my time of distress. As David faced some unbelievably hard times in his life, verse 6 says that he turned to the God of heaven and called upon Jehovah. This same verse says he not only called upon the Lord, but he cried unto his God. Imagine what life would be like if we went through our day-to-day existence, and there is no one, there is no power any higher than a human being or a government. Imagine what life is like if there is no God that is able to help those who seek to love and serve him. If the God of the Bible does not exist, I submit that life, earthly life, is an exercise in absolute futility. If the God of the Bible does exist, then we have a resource that is beyond our wildest imagination. David was someone who believed in the God of the Bible. He had tested the God of the Bible for help and aid in the past. And in verse 6, he says, this God has heard my voice. It is one thing to call on someone. It is another thing to cry. We have a cat. And sometimes that cat calls. But there's some times in life when our kitty cries. And I'll be the first to tell you that when our kitty cries, that means I really need help. I've gotten tangled in something, I've gotten myself in a jam, and I can't get out. And the kitty cry means, come, and come quickly. I need help. Well, sometimes that's what happens when we think about God. Sometimes we call to God. And then there's some times when we cry out to God. We're in the storm. We're on the boat that's headed for the rocks, God, and things don't look good. We need you to hold our hand and help us through this difficult time. David in Psalm 18 says that God will hold the hand of his people through those difficult times. At the very end of verse 6, David says that his petition, his prayer, came to God's ears. Remember, if you will, that this psalm seems to be a general summary of some of the things that happened in David's life. The words certainly describe one of his experiences, but also as you look at passages like 2 Samuel 22, this seems to have almost been a pattern for him. There were multiple times when he called or cried out to God and said, I need deliverance. There are enemies that want to take my life. There are people who oppose me, and God, I need help. This psalm tells us that as David went through those times, God was actively involved in his life. If you look ahead to verse 7 a little bit, you find some language that's interesting. David said the earth shook. It also trembled. He said the mountains quaked and they were shaken. Well, not literally. A lot of the information in this psalm, a lot of the language is figurative. But David uses this symbolic speech to say, as he was going through these difficult times, the God of heaven did not sit by idly and just let him suffer. God has the ability to move and act and help his people. And David said that's precisely what took place in his life. Someone once said, and I like this expression, I didn't come up with it, but someone once said that prayer rings the alarm bell. And that's really what David is trying to say. That statement has some truth in it. God has acted in all kinds of ways throughout the history of man. David said he'd actually experienced some of God's power and assistance in his own life. The smoke that comes from God's nostrils in this psalm. Well, once again, that's not literal, but it is an expression of God's wrath. Here was David. He was one of God's people, and there were individuals who were trying to take his life. God was aware of what people were trying to do. God saw that David was being hunted, and God was angry. That accounts for the smoke coming out of the nostrils. God knew about the threat against David, and God said, I'm not going to stand by and let this man experience what some people want to do to him. When God swung into action, things changed, and changed quickly. The God who helped David is the same God who exists today and stands ready today to act on behalf of his people. God's power is vividly demonstrated in verse 8. Notice the expression, fire out of the mouth. The thought seems to be that God opened his lips just a little bit and bang, fire came out. Once again, it is not apparently a literal statement. But we think about as far as in comparison to other body movements. When someone opens the lips a little bit, that's not a great gesture. It's not like someone is using a fist to smack someone, or it's not like doing some jumping jacks. It's a very small thing as far as energy. And that seems to be a way of saying, God obviously doesn't have literally mouth and lips. But that imagery seems to be a way to say that God did not have to exercise a lot of power. Just a small amount of power from God is sufficient to help us. Stated another way, God does not find it difficult to assist his people when they need aid. God has plenty of power, and he is not hesitant to use it. Verse 9 talks about God bowing, or God opening the heavens. Imagine tomorrow, the sun comes up, and we look outside. Maybe it's sunny, maybe not. But as we look out tomorrow, and we stare out into the sky, and we're expecting to see what we've always seen, but tomorrow, things are different. Tomorrow, the sky has literally been ripped apart. Imagine that if you can. The sky has just been torn in two. Who would say, wow, look at that. What caused that? Well, that's the picture of God coming to help David. Using figurative speech, David says, here I was in this difficult situation, and not just once, many times. God heard my call. He heard my cry. And as God saw my predicament, God ripped apart the heavens. Why? Well, that's an image to say, hey, God was going to reach down and help me. Now, God certainly does not need to leave heaven to help anybody. He's never had that need. But David used figurative speech to help impress on us the love that God has for his people and God's great desire to aid his people. The imagery as we look at this psalm and think about what David said, it's almost fearful speech. Think about the God of heaven separating the sky to help one of his people or a congregation of his people. That's who the God of the Bible is. When we think about statements for God so loved the world, that's exactly right. And Psalm 18 emphasizes that great love. Then as we look at verse 9, we have some information about the thick darkness. We are coming to a time of the year where we have some inclement weather. And there may be a time where the weather is especially bad one day, or maybe there are a series of days, maybe so bad that the postal service doesn't deliver mail. Or maybe it does deliver mail and we say it's going to have to sit in the box for a couple of days because of the snow and ice. We find times where people will stock up on groceries so they don't have to leave their house for a couple of days, or maybe they're going to stay in during a weekend. David imagined darkness that is so bad, so thick, so terrible, that people would say, we're not going to go out in the darkness because it's just not safe to be out there. David, as he talks about that terrible darkness, he says the darkness was not going to stop God. It was fierce, it was terrible, it was awful. It would stop human beings, but God was not going to be stopped by darkness. In fact, there's nothing that stops God from his people. Sleet, snow, hail, wind, fire, darkness, whatever the issue. God says, if my people need help, I will hear their cry. And I'm not put off by these things when it comes to aiding my people. David believed his calling to God, we might say, was able to move heaven and earth to get him the things that he needed in life. David, as he looked back at what seems to have been one specific time, but many other times in general, he knew his claim, he knew these words were right, because he says, here's the evidence. As I look back at my life, I can see that God has delivered me time and time and time again. God comes, and God delivers his people when they need aid. I'm going to read verse 10. This says, and he, that's God, rode upon a cherub and did fly. Yea, he soared upon the wings of the wind. As with many of the other statements in this psalm, this statement is not literal. God does not need to ride on anything, certainly not an angel, to get anywhere, because he is omnipresent. He's always in all places at once. This verse does suggest, though, that God has a variety of tools to help his people, and he's willing to use those tools to help people, and in some cases, even punish people. The flying part of the imagery suggests that God is capable of moving at great speed. Now, God may not always move as quickly as we want. Oftentimes, we have our agenda, and we think, well, God should do this, and he should do this by this particular date, or he should operate on this particular time schedule. The Bible does not agree with those ideas, but God does act. He's capable of acting quickly. He's able to act in a way that is really beyond our ability to understand as far as his power. He has all the tools to act in the right way and at the right time. But many times as we think about God, we think, well, we know how God should act, or we know how God will act, or we think that this is the way that God should choose to behave. And maybe we even think sometimes that we can figure out how God works. We oftentimes have a curious side, and that curious side can kick in, and we think that we have great confidence in understanding God. But trying to understand God and his methods is usually an exercise in futility. Notice verse 11. He made darkness his hiding place, his pavilion round about him, darkness of waters, thick clouds of the skies. Now, this verse does not mean that God is literally hiding somewhere. It's not like hide and seek with God. But David is using language to say that God is in a category all by himself. It's a way of saying that his plans, his ideas, even his help, those things are structured in such a way where they are so amazing that we really don't have adequate words to describe it, let alone try to comprehend it. The most brilliant people in our world, if they looked at God's plans, they would say, wow, that just, in some cases, just doesn't make sense to me. The prophet Isaiah worded it this way in Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9. He said, your thoughts are not my thoughts. Your ways are not my ways. God says through the prophet Isaiah, my ways are far above your ways. And sometimes the prophet Hosea is a good example of that. Hosea just couldn't get his mind around God's plan. God says, this is too wonderful of a plan. God said to the prophet, even if I told you the plan, you still wouldn't believe it. You still couldn't grasp it. God is very distinctive in how he thinks and acts, and that's why David says it's like he's shrouded in darkness. It's like he's hiding. But God also makes exactly the right choice for us, time after time, year after year. He knows exactly when, how, where, and how much to help people. He also knows that when he acts, those actions are often dramatic. Staying with the same psalm, but now looking at verse 14. And he, that's God, has sent out his arrows and scattered them. Yea, lightnings manifold and discomfited them. David had some enemies. And as he looked back at those people who had opposed him, Saul and others, David said there were some arrows that came from God. Once again, not literally flaming arrows from God. But David knew that God had acted in such a way where his enemies had been addressed. The enemies had been scattered. David said, the foes that scared me, the foes that terrified me, God was the one who took care of them. Today, as we think about people, they say, I need protection, so I'm going to buy a gun, or I'm going to get a knife, or I'm going to use a club, or I'm going to have a big flashlight next to the bed. God has a whole arsenal of things to use on the people who oppose his people, and a whole range of tools to help his people. God offers a defense for his people, and God also provides for his people all the offense that they need. If we are on God's side, we will never fail if we choose faith and persistence. In verse 17, towards the end of this first section, David said he had an enemy. And as you look at that 17th verse, it says that he had a strong enemy, powerful enemy. He also says there were some people who hated him. It is also here that David says the strong enemy, this powerful enemy, he says it was too mighty for me. Now, David was not some weakling. It wasn't like he was an old man that had lost his strength. David was a mighty man, but he said there were some people in my life who were too mighty for me to handle. They were too big for me to take on. In life, as we go through our day-to-day existence, we can look at some people, we can look at some problems and say those people and those problems are too big for me. I do not have the resources, I do not have the wisdom, I do not have this, that, or the other thing to handle these people and these situations. So God, how can I handle this? How can I endure this? How can I get past this set of circumstances? Well, as long as we keep that pronoun I in there, the answer is probably going to be that we're going to fail. But David took that I out and said, God, I need you to be my strength. I need you to be my rock. I need you to be my refuge. I need you to be my help. There is no enemy, there is no problem that is too big for God. We can serve a God who says, I care so much about you that I am willing to help. I'm willing to hear your cry and your call. God says, I am willing to, figuratively speaking, rip apart the heavens and reach down and help lift you up and offer you assistance. Verse 16, he sent from on high. He took me. He drew me out of many waters. There's the imagery. Someone that is, if you will, drowning in water, and someone reaches down with a mighty arm and picks up that person and says, I've saved you. I've protected you. You didn't have the ability to get out on your own, and here I am to offer assistance. As we go through life, calamity may seem to come in bucketfuls, but verse 18 says, if we are a child of God, God is willing to be our rock. David said in verse 19, he had been brought to the point where he was in a large place. Well, once again, you can see the significance of that. David, as he was going from cave to cave, as he was hiding in that mountainous area, he would have been in some pretty unpleasant places. I've crawled around in some caves. In the early years, I did some spelunking. And in some respects, that was fun. But when you're crawling around in a hole, you never know what's going to be inside that hole. There's some nasty insects. You can find some bats and some other things. And it is not the place where you really want to stay for very long with all the creepy and crawly stuff in caves. But David said those trials had been hard, they had been difficult. But God had brought him into the large place. He had seen him through those difficult times. God delivered David because God delighted in this man. The God of heaven, though we're weak, though we sin often, David affirmed that God can and will delight in the people who really seek to serve him. And when a person makes that choice to delight in God, to really seek to serve him in every way, will things turn out okay for that person or that group or that family? The answer from Psalm 18 is yes. Will it always be easy? No. David certainly had some hard times. Verse 19 of Psalm 18 is also an important passage for us. If we are a faithful child of God, we will be helped. There is not a single problem in life that God cannot help us with or be unable to deliver us from the difficulty. This is a promise that we need to understand. It's a promise that we need to believe. It's a promise that we need to appreciate, and it's a promise that we need to apply every single day. But for that promise to be true, we've got to be a child of God. Now, for David, that involves some things that are different from us. David lived under that Old Testament that we talked about this morning. Jesus came and gave a New Testament, and now Jesus was not there to believe in for people like David, but he is there to believe in for the people on this side of the cross. And with that belief, there is that desire to do the things that causes God to delight in us. That's repentance. We turn from what's wrong and do our best to live according to the scriptures. We confess that Christ is our rock, our hope, our salvation, the only way to God. And then finally, so that God will delight in us, we become one of his people. We're baptized into Christ, Galatians 3:27. So every single sin can be remitted so that we can start walking in the light, 1 John 1, verse 7. And then as we continue that Christian walk, God will be our rock, our shield, our deliverer, our help, day after day in life. That is a great, great promise. A lot of people are going to start thinking about a new year. Thanksgiving is over. Christmas is not very far in the future, and people are starting to think about 2012. What's life going to be like, you know, for me and for my family in 2012? Are we going to be okay? Well, we can face that new year if it comes, with God being on our side and He being our helper. If He is not on your side, if He is not your helper from day to day, this evening we'd like to help you change that. To become a Christian, faith, repentance, confession, baptism, or to bring you back into the fold by encouraging you to once again return and live the kind of life that the Bible describes. If we can help you in either of those ways or another, we let us know how we can aid you as we stand and sing the selected song.
The voice of the Savior says, come. The cross where He died is in sight. He now at the cross there is room. Are you coming to Jesus tonight? Are you coming to Jesus tonight? Are you coming to Jesus tonight? The bride and the spirit invite. Are you coming to Jesus tonight? The voice of the Father implores the mercy's most wonderful high. His love in their coffee outpours. Are you coming to Jesus tonight? Are you coming to Jesus tonight? Are you coming to Jesus tonight? The bride and the spirit invite. Are you coming to Jesus tonight? Oh, who to Himself will be true, of all whom these voices invite. Who answers my brother, do you? Are you coming to Jesus tonight? Are you coming to Jesus tonight? Are you coming to Jesus tonight? The bride and the spirit invite. Are you coming to Jesus tonight?
Please be seated.
When we get to the time of year where we have Thanksgiving and Christmas, a lot of people think, hey, the holidays are here. Great. We just can't look forward enough to the time of